Hello and welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast. The Six Nations is back again. Round four, England versus Ireland tops the bill. Twickenham, 4:45pm this Saturday, live on RTE2 and RTE Player. Italy against Scotland also on Saturday. Wales against France is Sunday in Cardiff. We'll be talking about all that and more with Bernard Jackman later in the pod and with Ben Coles of The Telegraph, who's going to drop in and run the microscope over England. But for now, it's just myself and Bernard. Birch, how are you?
Great, thank you.
I might start off with a mini rant. Mini rant. Not being too negative, but we're through the second of these break weeks now. Mm. And I'm not sure why, but I felt this year, this second break week has dragged like nothing else. And I just feel like we're coming into round four of this now. And the entire momentum of the Six Nations has just been, it's just been dunted. I'm kind of done with these break weeks.
Yeah, but the next year, I think this one's gone, isn't it?
Yeah.
My understanding is. And I think it's, even for the players, I'd imagine it's too much, you know. This is the highlight of their season in a non-cup, World Cup year. And yeah, I think it's lost momentum. Like it's Wednesday now and it's England-Ireland. We're two matches away from potentially a championship. And it's actually quite muted, isn't it? You know, apart from people thinking that I have tickets or whatever, but for Twickenham, which I don't. But yeah, no, it is. It's, yeah, I don't think the players need it. I don't think the competition needs it. And one foul a week is a weekend is more than enough for me.
Yeah, and like it's one of those things where obviously it's player welfare has been the reason we've had it, but you do get the feeling like the momentum is kind of hurting the players as much as anyone else. And I know we get URC games in those weeks as well, but you know, the URC games get lost in this six-day window. It's not actually beneficial to the URC. I know there were some decent matches and, you know, decent tries and stuff at the weekend, but it does all get a little bit lost during this. And even then last week, you know, journalists, maybe even myself, there's some amount of rubbish that gets written during these down weeks where you've no game. we're digging out who's in our Lions team now this week. You know?
Oh, jeez, don't go there. Or don't go the atmosphere of either.
Yeah, we'll do that one again. But anyway, look, we'll get straight into the match because we do actually have a match to talk about. England against Ireland on Saturday. Saturday evening, 4:45pm kickoff. The big one is team selection. Andy Farrell will be naming his team on Thursday for the game. Potentially Birch, Hugo Keenan and Gary Ringrose both fully fit. We're not 100% certain yet. They have been back training. Ringrose is probably closer to being available than Keenan is, but we'll wait and see. Leads the question, if Gary Ringrose and Hugo Keenan are both fit and are both good to go, how does the Ireland team look? And I'm including the bench in that.
Yeah, I think I personally would, well, Hugo would start. Mm-hmm. And I'd be very tempted to go 5-3 on the bench with Murray, Frawley and Ringrose. And I don't think we will. I think we'll go 6-2. And I can understand the logic behind that because I think we now have, you know, very powerful replacements to bring very powerful replacements in Ryan Baird, for example. If he stays on the bench, I wouldn't be against him starting, to be honest. But if it's not him, then Peter Manny, James Ryan, and Jack Conan, you know, can really give you some firepower along with your front row replacements. But you're taking a risk, I think, if you go Connor and Gary in a 6-2. Connor, now I know we went 6-2 and we had Stewart and Sean McCluskey and
Crawley in the starting team.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we had come for 10. So who would go 10 if Jack got injured after 5 minutes? If you go with a 6-2 with Connor and Gary, that's the question. You know,
it's probably Connor Murray.
It's probably Connor Murray. Yeah. And obviously, then the problem is, like, I know Gibson Park can cover on the wing, you know, and he has done late in the game. But the rest of those backs, if it hadn't happened, Gibson Park, and I know I'm jumping to conclusions here, but if I hadn't happened Gibson Park, then who would go 10 if Connor had to go in 9, you know? It's just that's, look at the Box have done it. The Box went 7-1, got away with it. Maybe it's not a risk. Maybe just the lads are pretty robust, to be fair. But just if you had a freak injury early in the game with Connor and Gary, it's a little bit risky. I think it's a little bit risky. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I know that the 6-2 split is, I don't want to say controversial because I don't think it's massively controversial, but there are people who aren't fans of it. But just like what we're doing there, I actually love the bit of chess involved in it when you're deciding with it. Well, you're saying, okay, well, if Jack Crowley gets injured, who's going in at half? Who's going to cover the center? Who's in at wing? Who's full back? And just in advance, trying to map out all those little small little contingencies, the 2% chances of everything. I actually really enjoy the trying to map out all those contingencies.
Yeah, look, when Mac Hansen comes back, obviously he's played 10 before, and so that, you know, that gives you a little bit more cover there. But it's I'd be fascinated. I do think. I think there's an argument in terms of going after England and bringing that power off the bench up front, to go 6-2. You know, they were very effective against Wales. They were really effective against Wales, and that would be fresh in Farrell's mind.
And they were brought on. They were brought on early enough as well in that game. Like sometimes Farrell can be a bit late to go to the bench, but you could see the impact where he went to them just after the 50-minute mark, and to a man, they all had a big, big impact.
Yeah, they did. They were brilliant, and the game was kind of okay. It wasn't swinging. Wales weren't going to win it, but we had lost a little bit of momentum. And I thought Kelleher, Baird, Conan, etc., James Ryan, they just gave us unbelievable go forward, and that could be the case against England. Like the game, it may become a little bit more attritional, and we may need to punch, and he may decide to do that. I think it's great we have that ability now, and also. Like if you have Conor Murray and Gary Ringrose on the bench, and I'm jumping to the conclusion that Gary doesn't start, you know, start, but I don't think he will. I think I think the lads who've been playing in the backs have done enough to warrant getting another start. You've got two very experienced players. Conor obviously can goal kick very well. Maybe he can play 10, you know, maybe he can play 10, and maybe our attacking shape is so fluid now that you don't have to have a huge amount of time in that position to pull the strings. So yeah, it's going to be I'm looking forward to seeing the selection tomorrow. I just around, like, I think it'll be a pretty standardized team, but yeah. I think Baird is putting his hand up massively to get a start in the Six Nations against maybe England or next week against Scotland. Not that he's clearly ahead of Peter, but I think his game, his all-round game, has just evolved and improved so much that there's a compelling argument for him that he's very, very close to starting, I think.
There is. And even if you're just including him on the bench, like if you're deciding between going 5-3 and 6-2, and if he is your sixth man in that forwards bench, there's a massive, like, he offers you so much and offers you so much different as well, where he's got the freak athletic ability and the speed and the dynamism, but he's also great in the close exchanges. And as we've seen in the last year, I think particularly, he's become an enormous part of how Ireland's lineout functions, both in attack and defence.
Yeah, it's brilliant to see that, because we were kind of probably waiting for someone to take the mantle of being that defensive lineout guru that Pete has done for 10, 12 years. And it was, I think, it wasn't something that I probably expected. I think maybe early in his career, he relied completely on his athleticism and his X factor. And I think it's brilliant to hear how he actually really enjoys that side of it. He does a lot of work with Paul. He's a student of opposition lineouts, and you can see that on the field, you know. And look, that's the thing. That was, for me, that was one of the areas that Pete was clearly ahead of him. And now Ryan has added that to his game. And obviously with the age profile of both, you know, Ryan will be around for a good bit longer, you would think, than Pete. It's a really nice tool for him to have in his toolkit.
Yeah, and there's a nice element of succession planning in it as well, where, you know, ultimately Andy Farrell can get to a point where he can phase Baird in and phase O'Mahony out the further one further O'Mahony goes towards the end of his career. Moving away from the team selection, actually, while you were talking, I realised Tadhg Furlong can cover out half if needed. So
true.
But moving on from the team selection, like, it's Ireland, England. We'll get into a bit more with Ben Coles from the Telegraph a little bit later on. But obviously, Ireland can win the title this weekend, even with a game to spare if they win with a bonus point. it's all obviously about the slam, though. If Ireland win and score three tries and there's a grand slam on the line next week, I think we'll be still be fairly happy. But how do you see, where do you see the potential frustrations for Ireland coming in this game about how England, who haven't really been that impressive for three matches, how they can go about squeezing Ireland and, I suppose, just knocking the confidence and momentum out of them?
Look, they raced into a 10-0 lead against Scotland, got a lovely set-piece try. But again, I thought that was a poor... I think Scotland's scrum defence is questionable. And I don't think that was... It was a play that Ireland would necessarily struggle with. But they do have some firepower. I think we're going to see a huge amount of aerial contestables. And probably Ireland haven't been tested that much in that area in this Six Nations. If you think about Wales... Wales' kicking game is very poor, and we weren't under any pressure there. They were kicking it long and on, so that wasn't tested. England's kicking game is generally quite strong, and you know, if we start to lose a couple of those 60-40s in the air, you know, then things change. They get back-to-back possessions. They may look to kick again on the front foot or in transition. And it might be as easy as we'd like. Ireland kick a lot as well, everyone talks about Ireland's attack, but Ireland's kicking game is a big part of how we play. It's just because we don't necessarily slow it down as much as England do, and have the caterpillar rooks and box kick. You know, we kick a little bit more with momentum, and obviously James Lowe is a big part of that. So I think that's where we could get into a battle really. Scrum wise, we obviously scrum really well against Wales. That's not the litmus test. I mean, England is a step up. Our lineouts had a couple of creaks against England. Now I think it's improved a lot against Wales. Sorry, lost a few at the back, but at least we were thrown to uncontested space, and it was only inches in it. So, but England's defensive lineout is good. So if England put a bit of a squeeze on us at set piece, and you know, are very competitive under his high balls, and we're not as good as we need to be, this game will be much tougher than we would like. And if I'm Steve Borthwick, and whether I'm looking at data or whether I'm just looking at what his team have done well previously against the better sides, that's where I'm going, you know. And I think that's the big challenge for him is last week, because obviously it was a follow weekend, to say, look, this is our plan for Ireland. It's not going to be mainly based around the things we've been talking about. We need to evolve. But this is going to get the Twickenham crowd into the game. This is going to give us our best possible chance of winning. And I think those players will be all over that. You know what I mean? They'll be all over that because they'll be hurt by what happened in Scotland, and they want to beat Ireland in Twickenham. So, yeah, that's what I expect anyway.
You feel like, yeah, like to sum it up on England, like you feel like you're going to get the World Cup semi-final
yes.
energy and intensity that they brought against South Africa and essentially try... basically bring Ireland kicking and screaming down to the gutters. Like,
yeah, and look, part of that's getting after the breakdown. But again, like, you look at Wales, like Tommy Rafael, he got one or two opportunities. But Ireland's, the way Ireland attack, and we have so many bodies around the ball carrier, generally our breakdown isn't an issue. In actual fact, it's a big strength of ours in terms of our ability to recycle the ball and recycle the ball quickly. England will obviously have to slow that down. They look to counter rook. But again, it's not something that at the moment you would be worried about for Ireland. But certainly from them, they have to basically go back to that. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, if you're a team in evolution, you know, you got to understand what's important this weekend. And for England, I think this weekend, a big performance, and maybe that's based around frustration at the start, is what's important to them, because getting caught in between two types of games, I think would only make Ireland's chance of winning easily more likely.
Mm-hmm. I'll put a pin in the England Ireland chat for now, and just very quickly before we get Ben Coles into the chat, I might just touch on Italy, Scotland, and Wales, France first. The other two games this weekend. First of all, Wales at home to France. That's also live on RT2 and RT Player on Sunday. Last week when we were talking about this, we kind of came to the general consensus that France are very, very vulnerable heading to Cardiff. Dante has got his suspension since then. We know that Mathieu Jalibert is ruled out. It's likely Thomas Ramos is going to be going to 10. But it looks like Emmanuel Meafu is going to be coming into that forwards pack. Do you feel a little bit different about France seeing that he's going to be in there, and just maybe the idea that even if they're not playing particularly well, they could just bully their way to a win physically?
Absolutely. And look at the first half against Italy. I mean, they absolutely bullied them. It was just their back line were unbelievably wasteful. And I think if you're... Then obviously they had the red card and they'll be very disappointed how the second half went. But I think that first half was a display of power that I don't think any other team in the Six Nations could match. You know what I mean? And if they just have to go back to that for to get that away win, then I think they will. And, you know, Tulagi, Movaca, I mean, there's so many big ball carriers. And if they bring Miafu into that as well, I don't know if Wales will be able to withstand that. You know, I don't think they're very brave. But if you look at against Ireland, when Ireland brought that power game, they struggled. It was only Ireland made a lot of mistakes by actually trying to play wide too early, I thought. But again, I couldn't trust France at the moment. I don't know where their energy is. I don't know what that draw will have done to their confidence. 2 weeks maybe too long in that camp for them, because obviously it seems to be a quite a strained atmosphere and environment. I would say that Dante out is a loss on paper, but he hasn't been playing very well. In actual fact, he was having a very poor game against Italy before the red card. So they could bring in Portier, and he looks like he's a machine, you know. And it might just be one youngster coming in, or Miafu coming in, who could just change the whole dynamic, you know. And but again, you couldn't put your house on him at all. On paper, it's no contest. I mean, those French players are so much superior to the Welsh players. But I think Wales have done okay. They've done okay. They've been competitive in two of the games. Against Ireland, okay, the scoreline wasn't too heavy, but I think they did enough that they could feel a bit of pride in that game.
Yeah, and I think it's because of those uncertainties why I'm really, really looking forward to that match on Sunday. The other one then, Italy and Scotland. You said you can't trust France at the moment. Do you trust Scotland going over to Italy?
A little bit more. I think I've actually been impressed with Russell's ability to play with a little bit more, be a little bit more streetwise. I thought the way he finished that last 20 against England was actually very, very smart by him. And the fact that Scotland came back from 10-0 down, I think it was a positive for them. I think that's the win Gregor Townsend's been looking for. And even though Italy showed a lot more and they're dangerous, no, I think Scotland, I don't think Scotland beat Ireland, but I think Scotland can beat Italy again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on those games. As I say, we will be bringing in, we'll take a short little break here now, and we'll be welcoming in Ben Coles from The Telegraph to look ahead a little bit more to England against Ireland this Saturday. Now, joining us this week is Ben Coles, rugby reporter for The Telegraph. Ben, thank you for joining us this week.
My pleasure, gents. Nice to see you.
Obviously, we have you on. We're looking to get a sense of what the mood is around this English team at the moment, coming in off the back of the World Cup. Like, I might bring it back to this time last year. My experiences of England are the two games they would have played at the Aviva Stadium in the last 12 months. The first being round five of the Six Nations last year, and the second one being the World Cup warm-up at the Aviva Stadium back in August. Now, I would say the mood around the team on both occasions was fairly dire. Like the last game of the Six Nations, people were talking about record scores in advance, and it probably didn't turn out that bad. Then obviously the last time England came to Dublin, it was overshadowed by all the Owen Farrell stuff that was going on with the ban and the appeal. So the mood wasn't particularly good at the time. Since then, obviously, they've had a World Cup semi-final, and I know it was disappointing for them last time out against Scotland, but two wins out of three in the Six Nations, even with a few issues maybe around bedding in some ideas around attack and defence. What is the mood around the place at the moment? The relationship between the media and the players and management?
Just listening to you sum it all up there, it kind of reinforces to me what a strange side they are. Because that first game in Dublin at the end of the Six Nations, they'd come off that 50-point thrashing at home to France, hadn't they? And they were almost, they were kind of like weirdly defiant in their performance. I know they lost, but I mean, we saw more out of them than we were expecting. And then, yeah, I was over for that warm-up game in August where the gap between the two sides, between Ireland and England, just felt enormous in terms of consistency, in terms of obvious tactical execution. And Jamie George is now England captain, which is fascinating because he historically in recent years has sort of been the player that they've kind of trotted out really to kind of appease people and get across the message that the squad are trying to put on the field and just trying to keep things positive. So he's a great choice as captain at the moment because he's still doing that. And I think he has a lot of support from fans and players and in the media. Because it does feel like they're just trying to fix a different issue each week or trying to kind of progress the game when actually we haven't seen a lot of development, particularly from an attacking standpoint now. I mean, this is an issue that goes back years. I think at the moment the mood is a bit down. I think partly because the Italy and Wales wins weren't completely convincing, and then against Scotland, I mean, you guys must have seen it as well. I can't remember seeing a test side with that many good players just making some of the obvious handling and attacking errors where you just wouldn't expect players of that quality to do that. They don't do that in the Premiership. They don't do that playing for their clubs. And so I think people are kind of waiting to see what this England side is really about. The run to the World Cup semi-final was great, but World Cups can be weird. Can't they? Like the odd results can get thrown up and all of a sudden the order of things is thrown into chaos. And actually they did incredibly well to get as far as they did. So yeah, to sum up, sorry, I appreciate that's a long answer. I think the mood is a bit down and I think expectations for this weekend against Ireland are incredibly low, to be honest. And I think people would take England being competitive as a sign of progress. I don't think anyone's thinking about them beating Ireland.
Birch, is the... like we kind of we touched on it last week where you're kind of breaking up Steve Borthwick's year and a bit now into two different cycles almost. There was the World Cup was its own thing and now they're kind of starting afresh. But has the fact that they got to a World Cup semi-final when they weren't necessarily playing great stuff, has that almost kind of raised the expectations to levels that they're probably not really able to hit at the moment?
Look, results-wise, they're in a really good place. But it's the content and the performances, and I think that's the thing. There was never really that feeling during the World Cup that England had momentum, and they were just kind of doing enough. And then obviously an amazing performance against South Africa. But having said that, I think England's style of play is perfectly suited to matching South Africa pretty well, and obviously the conditions were tough, and England found that emotional charge. Maybe South Africa just weren't as good as they were in the previous round against France, and they could have won, and that would have been incredible. But I think that the challenge is that Borthwick promised, and all the sound bites from the squad was, now we're going to go and evolve our game, and we're going to entertain, and Twickenham is going to be an amazing place to be. Again and reconnect with the fans, and in fairness that just hasn't happened in those first three games, and it is, three games isn't very much to evolve a lot, and particularly I suppose, you know, defensively it's very obvious what they're trying to do, and there's been some big mistakes in that, but that's okay. I think the challenge is it isn't very obvious what they're trying to do in attack. That's different, you know. Ours in, the tools don't seem to be there to allow them do it in a good place. Now, having said that, Ireland's first year under Farrell and Cass, you know, there was all talk about playing what you see, heads up rugby, all this stuff, and it actually wasn't evident or obvious. So, and that worked out pretty okay. So, it is going to be interesting, you know, can they just keep the squad together? Obviously, what Ben says and other things I've read is the squad have been very defiant, and that's great. And then just get that, I suppose, big win or performance where you see it all kind of coming together. And I think England fans will be patient if they do see it coming together. But obviously, there were so many individual errors against Scotland that it, you know, and in fairness, it seems as if the players and the squad were completely shocked by that. They hadn't trained badly. They thought they were going to go up there and do a job, and that can happen. That can be just an outlier. But to happen 2 weeks in a row, to happen against Ireland in Twickenham, would be worrying for them. So there's a lot of pressure on England. I agree with Ben. There's not pressure on them maybe to win, but there's certainly pressure on them to be competitive and to start putting bits of their game together in a more fluid way, I would say.
And Ben, obviously, like, your title had a fairly revealing piece a couple of days ago, just about the frustrations around the attack, particularly where I won't give away the full details, but essentially one player, one unnamed player, had essentially touched the ball once over the course of an entire training session, and how there were frustrations that all of the efforts were being put into this new defence under Felix Jones, and the attack was kind of being forgotten about. And ultimately, 2 + 2 = is that what we saw at Murrayfield? Was that the result of it all? What's the reaction been to that? And has there been any backlash or reaction from players or the camp towards this?
I think in terms of the actual story itself, I don't think there's been too much quibbling about it, just because it makes sense when you hear those kind of things about what you're seeing on the field. And it makes sense knowing kind of the template that Steve Borthwick and his coaches probably want to build around. It is going to be realistically around defence and around kicking. Like, that's what, you know, that's what he views as the best way to win test matches. And actually, we've seen that is the case with South Africa and France and New Zealand and Ireland in recent years. Like, that is the way to win games. So when we have a story like that, it almost chimes with what you're seeing on the field, because all of the focus must be going into defence and into kicking, because I can't think of another way to explain why the attack is so bad. And so I think that seems to be the people's general reaction towards it at the moment. It was kind of, it's a great story by my colleague Dan Schofield, to be fair, because it kind of illustrates what players are up against. I think with attacking systems, we've heard England coaches say this so many times over the years, it's often the hardest thing to do. It's often the hardest thing to get right. It's the hardest thing to bed in for players to kind of do on a second-hand basis. And this week, of course, with Ireland coming to Twickenham, there's so many envious looks across the IRC at what Ireland do, with how well-structured their kind of multi-phase play is and the depth and deception that their runners have. England just don't attack like that at the moment. It's a lot of one-out forwards on their own, no support, no, in just like single pods, basically sticking their hand up and saying, I'm the ball carrier, come tackle me. There's not enough flair to it. There's not enough creativity to it. And so I think fans are torn between knowing that they need to be patient to see that, but also they want to see something. And so I think it'll be really interesting on Saturday, the contrast that you have between the way England's attack is at the moment and how brilliant Ireland's is, to be honest.
And Bert, on the, like, on that report, like, from your coaching experience, yeah, is that a particularly unusual thing to see, where one element of the game is being prioritized so much over the course of a week, even in the early stages of kind of bedding it in? Or are we in the general public kind of overreacting to it a little bit because we don't have that insight into what a normal coaching week is like?
Yeah, look, I think I would be shocked if you added up the minutes that they did defense and attack, there was a vast difference. But I can see why it would maybe feel like that, because the new face, okay, there was a Andrew Strawbridge was in from New Zealand doing some attacking breakdown work. He's gone now, so he was a new voice. But realistically, the new voice is basically Felix Jones. And the way he is, he's so intense, the way he'd be trying to have small conversations, the way he'd be trying to get his point across. I mean, I listened to Ben Earl say he goes around a place with a laptop. He's just grabbing people, showing them clips, you know. So it may feel like that. And then obviously, is it Richard Wigglesworth is an existing coach who's now looking after the attack, and maybe it's more subtle how he's trying to implement what he wants to do. And obviously, if you're an outside back and you only get one pass in the Six Nations in three games or whatever, you are gonna go, oh, well, are we prioritizing our defense too much? But I'd say Borthwick, and for a guy who's data driven, everything will be measured, and realistically, it should be, I'd say it's very much 50-50. But as I said, the new voice is preaching about defence, and it may feel like they're, it's more radical what they're trying to do there. And of course, that's in your brain then a little bit more. But no, I don't think they, I don't think that they would be setting up completely to just defend and attack or defend and kick. But although I think that's their best chance of getting the result this weekend is to do that now. While, and that's the hard thing is for Steve, you know, he wants to evolve. He wants to give his players the license to try new things, to get another 80 minutes practicing, you know, this new attacking philosophy. But I think that's very dangerous to do against Ireland because Ireland's defence is very good. And I think England's best chance of beating Ireland is to go to a set-piece kicking defensive game. But then do you say, well, you know, we're going to lose momentum then for the last round, and we effectively haven't used the Six Nations properly in terms of trying to evolve. But yeah, it's a tough one for him to do because obviously a result of the weekend would give him so much credibility with the fans and time, and everything would settle down. But I don't think evolving their attacking game this week is the week to do.
And it's funny, like on the defense, Ben, because the proof of concept kind of is there. We've seen it at stages over the first three games where when it has worked, it has been very, very, very effective. But I suppose the issue with it is that it's such an aggressive and high risk defense that if there is one mistake, it's probably going to be exposed, where maybe you could have a more passive defensive system that kind of makes more tackles and is probably a bit safer in theory, but you're probably not going to get the rewards out of it in the long term. So if you're an optimistic English fan, you can probably look at it and say, okay, even though they've been carved open maybe once or twice each game, you know, the bones of it is there and the foundations of it are there if they can just perfect it.
Yeah, I know exactly. I think there's more forgiveness there because also it's a defence that's coming from a coaching tree, which, let's face it, has won two World Cups.
It's proven, yeah.
And
yeah.
So I think therefore, and it's a well-worn soundbite now from the South African camp that it took about 14 games, I think, for them to feel kind of comfortable in that defence and getting it to fire. So I think with that, people can sort of accept more that you're at the very early stage of trying to install a new defensive system with a new defence coach. It's going to take time. There's going to be mistakes. And also, because it's so high risk, you might let the odd try in, but you also see glimpses of it working in games where attackers are shut down early behind the game line and you think, oh, okay, this is the merit of it. So I think because of that combination of it working with South Africa and a rough idea of how long it might take to bed in, people are more willing to forgive that. I think with the attack, because there's no like time frame on an attack functioning, or at least not one that's been publicly set, I think therefore that's where the frustration starts to begin, because people wonder when they're going to see kind of a slick operation.
It's funny on the Jacques Nienaber 14 games line. I was writing about it a few days ago. I find it amazing. I think he's an absolute genius for coming out with it takes 14 games.
Yeah,
I know it's based on what he, you know, his experiences with South Africa, but ever since he has said it, I have heard that line mentioned in press conferences and put to coaches so many times over the last couple of months. I think it's absolutely brilliant.
Neil, when I was in the Dragon,
you could have said 10 or 15 games and you wouldn't have thought of thing, but it's very specific. But wait for it. I did actually go back and think, I wonder if there's anything to it. So, what would you say was the game where things started to click for Andy Farrell's Ireland? Where we really got the impression, okay, there might be something going here.
No, I don't know. Go on.
The England game, 2021 Six Nations, the one at the Aviva Stadium, last match of the tournament.
Okay. How many games was that?
That was Farrell's 14th game. But anyway, go on.
No, I think coaches are going to start telling the board, oh, it's 61 games or something like that. If they're under a bit of pressure, just push it out there, push it out there. But look at it, it's great. He's such a fascinating guy. And I do think the challenge will be, and I've spoken to some pro coaches around this, that system is an amazing system, but it does suit the profile of the box as well, you know, and like I know some of the Super Rugby defense coach, sorry, the South African franchise defense coaches, and they are all disciples of Jacques, and they talk to him regularly. They all try and implement that system as best they can with the limitations around the players they have. So you have that. Okay, I know the Box had players coming from Europe and from Japan, etc. But there was that alignment. Whereas obviously for Felix, can he get Exeter are quite similar, to be fair, under Omar. But you know, can he get all those or as many of those Premiership clubs having the same philosophy? So the players are doing that week in, week out. That's something that maybe we don't think about often enough.
Yeah. And teams who don't use that system, players from teams in the Premiership who don't play that system, have been very open about how they're kind of adapting to that. I think Northampton players in particular sort of they're adjusting to that kind of on the go over the course of a few weeks. So yeah, no, it's a really good point.
On the selection then, Ben, and you mentioned the Northampton players, and obviously George Furbank is the one that came in for Freddie Stewart last time around. Is there any sense that there'll be changes this week, or is Borthwick getting to a point where he needs to decide on what a team is and let that team gel together?
I mean, I'm hoping for George's sake that he does play, because he's had such a bonkers test career in terms of coming in and out of the side. Otherwise, he kind of got parachuted into the side at the end of the 2022 Six Nations away against France when they were going for the slam, just out of nowhere. His last game before that had been the fly half against Tonga in like the previous autumn. Like he's kind of had such a stop-start career that it would send an interesting message if Furbank didn't play and he just went back to Stewart at fullback. Now, he did that before at the World Cup, where Stewart didn't play in the quarterfinal and then came back for the semi-final against South Africa and was excellent in the air, as we know he can be. I think the big changes are going to be at lock or in that kind of second row, back row combination, where I think England would like George Martin in the mix just to disrupt things instead of off the bench, and therefore Martin's been playing more of a lock recently in the last 18 months than six when he's been fit. So do you have him and Ollie Chessam and then move Marrow to six? I think that's an option that they might consider to try and compete with Ireland's line out and set piece. And the biggest one really is at halfback, where look, Alex Mitchell and Marcus Smith are fit again. And actually all the sounds out of camp when England were at their pre-tournament camp in Portugal in the opening weeks have been that they wanted to start with Mitchell and Smith, Marcus Smith together against Italy, and for that to be their kind of halfback combination with Ollie Lawrence and Henry Slade in midfield. It wouldn't shock me, therefore, even though Smith hasn't played all tournament and Mitchell missed the Scotland game, I think they're almost so far, it sounds like I'm really doing England down, they're almost so far away from beating Ireland that it's not a drastic thing to bring in a new halfback combination hasn't played together yet in the tournament for this game. If England looked like title contenders, you'd sort of say, well, why kind of risk tweaking it? But actually, I don't see an issue with bringing Alex Mitchell and Marcus Smith back in. You get the combination you wanted at the start of the tournament with Lawrence and Henry Slade and see how they get on. So I think that's the main thing. Who's going to start at fly half? And now we know that Finn Smith is carrying a knock. It's either Marcus Smith or Ford. Could be Marcus straight back in.
Would you feel Mitchell is pretty much certain to be coming straight back in? And then is it a question mark around out half?
I think I would assume that Mitchell is probably the one who will come back in based on him starting the first two games. And Danny Kerr kind of had an up and down game at Murrayfield. And it's just so well suited to that bench role, coming off the bench late in games to change games. We saw that in the World Cup against the Mara, I think it was. He's so good in that role that I think if England could, they'd probably, if Mitchell's good enough to start, fit enough to start, then I think, yeah, I could see him coming back in.
Is the issue for England, Birch, not to be disrespectful, that they need a lot more than to be picking players that can make an impact off the bench, because, you know, the game could be out of reach by the time some of those players are being called for?
Yeah, look, I think Marcus Smith and Alex Mitchell is probably where England will need to go, or Finn Smith and Alex Mitchell, you know, in terms of evolving their attacking game. Because I think they're caught between two stools at the moment with George Ford. And he has been brilliant for them. And he certainly has a role to play. But I think to actually really see it ignite, that would be a positive selection from them. It's just, I think they would, Marcus would get shut down pretty well by Ireland. Like, I think everyone's talking about Ireland's attack. Honestly, I've done a lot of reviewing of it, and our defence is much better than it was in the World Cup. And it wasn't weak last year by any chance, or by any means. But so I think it'll be there. The Marcus, I would say, would have a tendency to overplay this weekend because until he settles back in to test rugby. And that would probably suit us. I don't know. I don't know if the game would be out of hand. Like, if Ireland, like Ireland weren't as accurate as they normally are against Wales, ball in hand either. Now we asked a lot of questions of Wales. Wales defended pretty well, but we weren't making the right choices on the gain line like we normally do. So that's probably something that we want to fix. If we do, like, I've done a piece for pre-match on England's defence, and yeah, when you throw certain shapes at them, they can catch you way behind the gain line. But unfortunately for them, the times that teams have thrown anything like Ireland tend to do, they've got hurt, and so that gives me big confidence that kind of our attack certainly has the tools and the shapes to ask questions of this defence. That's still bedding in, you know. In a year's time, might be a different issue, and we have actually struggled against the Springboks to break them down, even though our attack is very layered. So. Yeah, I think Ireland will find opportunities against them, but I think it'll be competitive. And I think it'll be competitive. I think you get a reaction out of England. There's too many good players in that England team to back up that poor performance in Scotland, I think.
On the question of how Ireland go about getting around that English defence, then, do you see Jack Crowley's approach to getting around it or behind it being different to how Johnny Sexton would have done it against South Africa at the World Cup? Like, Crowley always strikes me as someone, he loves a little chip in over the top or a grubber down towards a corner where there's space. Do you think we'd be seeing a little bit more of that, for example, compared to what we would have seen out of Sexton?
No, I don't think so. I think it'll be very similar. And they have experienced that before. It's not as actually kamikaze as South Africa, to be fair. There's actually it's not there yet. I'm sure Felix wants to get there. But it isn't. I think you can actually, unfortunately, from what I've seen, you can actually go through them and go around them, particularly off a line break on that second phase. So, yeah, I think Crowley's got the skill set, but there may be the odd little kick through, but I think we throw a lot of numbers at it in a short space. And I think you just need one player to just jump and then obviously be able to execute that pass. And the teams that have struggled haven't had isolated runners or massive depth, and you need to have a lot of guys in the front line quite tight to each other, and then obviously that those backdoor options which we tend to have nearly all the time. So that's probably the worst attack that Felix will want to face this early.
Ben, before we leave you go, like, plenty of navel gazing here in Ireland. What are the English rugby public thinking of Ireland at the moment?
Oh, I think opinion's probably never been higher. I don't think. I think they view them as, there's so much admiration for Andy Farrell and what the coaching staff have done. The kind of the hilarious line that seems to be trotted out is people, when they see Ireland play well, go, "How did the RFU let Andy Farrell go?" And you're like, "Well, they sacked him." Because it was a disastrous Rugby World Cup. Like, that's how this situation arose. I think there's just so much respect for how they play. For certain individual players as well, I think Bunyaki is held in very high regard. So is Peter Imani. The combination that Gibson Park has with Crowley now, I think people were so impressed watching that France-Ireland curtain raiser. I think everybody was looking at Jack to see how he'd kind of settle into that Johnny Sexton role, and the way it's been fairly seamless so far. Yeah, listen, I think people respect that Ireland are an incredibly slick, well-drilled operation, and I think they're envious of that because England don't appear to have that same, and don't have that same cohesion yet at this stage in their development, in this cycle under Steve Borthwick. And so, yeah, everyone's very jealous. And I imagine, but I also imagine everyone's just, you know, checking the odds for Saturday, because if you are brave enough to consider parting ways with some money for England, the odds are very generous. So, you know, You never know. Bernard's exactly right. Like, there's a way. I think England's style at the best can be frustrating for opposition and kind of niggly and cause kind of not tension, but it can, they can frustrate teams. And so I think that is their route to victory. How long can they stay in the game? And can they hit Ireland with a sucker punch?
Well, I mean, you only have to go back 2 years to see how, you know, Ireland just have to be a little bit jittery on the day. And I know Ireland pulled away in those last 15 minutes, but that was probably the red card showing a difference, you know, for 65 minutes of that game. Ireland were looking very, very edgy, and England had their backs up off the back of that red card.
I mean, listen, if England can avoid a red card in a test against Ireland, that would be a start. That would be progress. Is it the last three? So, I mean, yeah, that'd be good.
Well, look, we'll see how it goes. And we might get you back in 10 more games, Ben, to give us a 14-game update on how this England team are looking. Ben, enjoy the match this week. It's been great having you. That's it from the pod. Ireland against England at Twickenham, live in the Guinness Six Nations on Saturday on RT2 and RT Player, and live commentary as well on RT Radio 1. Thanks for watching.